To have a good harvest, one must plant good seeds and must also use the right kind of fertilizer. The carrots have grown large and firm. How good they will taste.
Well, good morning, gardeners and homesteaders and everybody alike. You know what? Today, your day just got better because you turned on the Backyard Gardens podcast. Welcome. Welcome to our humble show.
I saw Batavia reaching. I don't think those two things can exist. We just made your day better, humbly.
Hey, whatever. It's all in fun and games, right? So it's the spring gardening season, as we know, it's not winding down. Well, it is winding down, but it's starting to change. But there's this weird thing in transition in the garden where we go from spring to summer. And a lot of people may get a little confused by it. They may not understand it, but we want to break it down for you the best we can today. I know Batavia's got this whole thing that she does in her garden. It's like this, it's amazing.
It's a ceremony.
I just want to tell you.
Yeah.
It's a ceremony, exactly. All I got to say is don't go by at night. You never know what you're going to see in the ceremony. But before we get started, there's a couple things I need to tell you. One, check out the link below and get us some seeds. Get some seeds from us. We would love to have you buy some of our seeds. They're all direct sowable for the season. And if we sell enough, we will be expanding into more varieties and types. I saw you reaching again. And the other thing, too, is I do want to tell you guys, it's a really good time of year to get the planter app. So right off the bat, there's a link below that's going to get you a nice discount on all their plans. But we're telling you, this app is very good for planning your garden. And you can get it right now. You can, in the square foot interface, you can drop all of your gardening plans for this year in. Mm-hmm. And then you can save it so you can work into your crop rotations and your companion plantings and all that. It's super visual. It's a true joy to use. So definitely check that out. And there's a new flower box feature and a seed box feature, all kinds of stuff being added to it. So it's the planter app, the planter app, and that's available on Google and Apple. So check that out, and the link below will get you a discount. So if you click the link, it'll just automatically take you to it. So don't go to the store and then try and it doesn't work. So click the link and then boom, get your discount and become a subscriber. End of story. And without further ado, let's dive into this billy goat. All right, Batavia. When does your garden start to transition from spring to summer? Like, what month do you think?
This is difficult for me.
As it is for everybody else. That's why we're doing the show.
Well, now.
Very direct.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so I got another word for it, but we're going to move along. So I was, folks in the Midwest especially, I think, experience this, and there are other people if y'all are in a different area in the U.S. or a different country and have the same experience, please do let us know over on the Facebook group, Backyard Gardens Community Garden. So my spring garden is planted, at the earliest sometime in March, but more like April. Mm-hmm. And some of my crops are just coming into like full swing, and they're at the last of their harvest once we get closer to the end of May, early July, right? Okay. Excuse me, early June. And so at the same time, I have summer plants that should be going in while my spring plants are still growing. I think we probably, you and I, there's a difference of two, three weeks, maybe even a month, where you're clear of spring plants and, mine are just hitting the swing.
That used to be the case. It's starting to change for me, which is one of the reasons why I was on board with doing this, is because over the recent years, I've really changed the way that I do a lot of things. I used to be, I'm in coastal North Carolina. April, done. Mm-hmm. That used to be my motto. Come April 15th, everything's out, everything's in. All spring's out, all summer's in. And it's kind of changed a little bit. So it's like it's a slower transition for me from April into May at this point. But there's like certain things that trigger that. And, you know, the unsexy side of it is it's all about weather for me. Mm-hmm. So, you know, because we can either have like this year, it seems like we're having a real spring. But the next one, like, I don't know, like, it could change rapidly. And then next thing you know, we could be in the 90s. Yeah. And so I just try and balance that out. But certain crops will definitely come out earlier than other crops.
Yeah, well, I mean, so using hard numbers, going back to last year's garden, I planted the last of my spring crops on April 30th. April 30th, right? And everything came to fruition. So I'm gonna kale, the last of them were kale, collards, broccoli, and cabbage. So I didn't have any issues with the cabbage forming ahead, right? I quite literally was harvesting them all season long. Broccoli, I did get to the point where broccoli started bolting like once we got to June, you know. So that was like the one casualty of planting that late. And understand, April 30th is late for me in my space. And then the collards.
At least you recognize that.
Yeah. And the collards, typically I can get away with, like, if I plant 10 collard plants, which I don't always do, but the 10 is a nice round number, you know, maybe one will bolt at some point throughout the year, but the rest of them will go through spring, summer, and still grow in fall. That's not everyone's story. So that's the reason why I say it's a little bit different for me. But if I look at more traditional crops, your spinaches, your cilantros, right? Things are absolutely sensitive to the cool weather and then the hot weather coming on. By the time we get to the end of May, lettuces and things, that first week of June, it's whatever is, I should be wrapping it up.
Yeah. Yeah. That's how, I mean, that's how we are for basically May. It's like, it needs to come out. You know, I just did a, you haven't even seen this yet. It will be out by the time this episode airs, but, I have this new thing occurring in my garden this year. The video is on Sandy Bottom Homestead on YouTube if you want to check it out. But I have kale bolting and cabbage bolting for the first time ever. And I don't want to pull my cabbage. I want to see what it does. But I want to plant something there, so I'm having a real difficult time with that.
Yeah, I had cabbage bolt a couple of years ago. I planted it in the fall. And, you know, it returned in the spring, but it bolted. It never got to the point of forming a head, though. Has the head started to form on yours?
On the cabbage?
Yeah.
No, it just went to bolt.
Yeah. Okay. So it's
good. I don't know why.
It should look like most other plants where it just starts to shoot straight up. Yeah, that's, you know, I don't know how big they get, though, because broccoli plants could get huge when they bolt. You know, so
I'm
that
sure
can be taking up
I'm
a lot
sure
of space.
I'm sure it's going to get giant. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, like my mustard's taken up my entire greenhouse, and I'm like, just hang in there. But it's like stealing the light. It's just a huge pain. But you know, that's part of this, though, is when you bridge the gap and you want to save some seed, you've got to factor all of this in. And I'm an opportunistic seed saver in spring.
Yeah.
If you're going to bolt, I'm going to save your seed. But if you're not going to bolt, I'm not going to make you bolt. You know, that's kind of where I sit with it. I tried to save some lettuce seed before. It didn't work out very well for me, though. I might try that again this year. Maybe.
That's probably the seed that I can most consistently save, lettuce and mustard and cilantro. When I say save, it's kind of like two parts. It's either me actually collecting the seeds and saving them, or it's them self-sowing. You know, lettuce is super pretty for me when it bolts, and it's almost always tucked away somewhere, so it really doesn't intrude on other things I have. And by the time cilantro starts bolting, I'm like in full steam in the garden. I don't have time to start. I mean, of course I have the time, but I never take a beat and go and actually pick those seeds because I kind of know they're just going to drop. And like I have cilantro as of this airing, I have cilantro in the garden in the same spot. That's germinated, you know, I've done nothing over there. And, you know, I'll probably let it continue to grow a bit because whatever I plan on planting in that space, I don't have to worry about it interrupting things, if that makes sense.
No, it totally makes sense. But, You know, when I started doing it before and I was like April 15th done, that was, you know, the tomatoes went in, everything went in. I was direct sowing everything, pulling stuff out. And the crop that really made me take a step back was my snow peas, because they were producing, they kept producing, they were not stopping. And I was like, well, let me just hold off. Let me just hold off. And so this kind of changed my planting schedule a bit. And then I went down the rabbit hole a little bit. And then, you know, the other thing too that I'm talking about this on the YouTube as well, and I want to talk about it here, is like, just because it's a little bit warm, it doesn't mean you've got to put that plant in right away. You know, oftentimes peppers and pumpkins and stuff like that, melons, they can go in a lot later and should go in when everything is a lot warmer. And that is really what kind of set me off to like make it so I now in my garden, you will like you will see very soon, well, by the airing of this episode, you will be able to see that I will have tomatoes and cabbage in the garden at the same time, whereas that would never have been an option. You would never, ever, ever see that. I can't even express that enough. And so, like, you'll start to see that we'll have tomatoes and some lettuce in the garden and stuff like that. So I'm timing it out. Here we go with the timing again, where the harvests are coming at the, you know, the end of the season, and then I can put something in. So this isn't really a time, in my opinion, to be like, let's give the garden a break. This is like push, 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 you know, get it out and plant it. And that's part of multi-season gardening.
Yeah, I'm looking back at my weather and because, you know, I tend to check the timeanddate.com site for past weather. So let's just look at the past versus what this month is currently doing. And on August, let's see, what's today? April the 18th, I think, is when this episode airs. Last year, April the 18th, I had a low of 34 degrees and a high of 57 degrees Fahrenheit, right? So my average last frost date would have been yesterday, April the 17th, but go all the way to the end of the month, April the 28th, about 10 days later, I have 50 degrees as a low, 61 as a high. Next day, 43 as a low. Like, that's too cool for me to put things like peppers and tomatoes in. Like, if I know that that's what that weather is going to be, a lot of folks in our area for flowers in particular, like your annual flowers, they'll do like on Mother's Day weekend or after for planting. And I kind of use that for my annual vegetables as well. Now, I never get planted that early, but it's a target this year if the weather allows. So, I mean, I think that when you think about, you know, the dates and timing, oftentimes you think about the dates associated with that. It's absolutely the weather is going to drive you, right? And you have weather patterns. You have a history of what your weather is. And then that should help influence what you're going to do this year as you're looking at the forecast.
Yeah, like I'm looking at my forecast now. My lowest low temperature for the next 10 days is, oh, what happened here? Stupid ads pop up all the time. 44 degrees, and that's one day, and everything else is in the 50s and 60s at night. So at this point, I'm targeting to plant out certain things. Yeah, like I'm going to be targeting in the next 10 days to plant tomatoes, some of my tomatoes, not all of them, and my squashes, because I'm looking at my squashes thinking, oh boy, you need to get in the ground. So those are looking like they need to get in the ground sooner than later. So I'll start hardening them off. It's supposed to get chilly tonight. I'll start hardening them off this weekend. By next week, I'll have them in the ground. But those are beds that I already have emptied. So I don't really have them, you know, I've planned for that. My Brussels sprouts, which, by the way, I want to make an announcement about my Brussels sprouts. Do you remember we did that episode about my formula I came up with? It was correct. I was right. Yes, it feels good to be right.
Yeah, it's I'm sure it, congratulations on being right about what's in your garden and what your family eats.
Well, the calculation of how much it would produce was just about on. Mm-hmm. And I will say this, that they, even though I'm extremely happy with what I got out of them, they were still a little light. Mm-hmm. But it was, you know, one plant per meal, 20 plants, you know, planting a little bit extra. It really did work out the way I had, you know, hypothesized that it would. So moving forward, I will continue that. But, you know, that bed right now has got 3 Brussels sprouts left in it. They can be harvested at any time. I can go out there right now and clear it out. Mm-hmm. It's fine. And that's where the squash will go.
Well, it's actually a really good, I was going to say as a side shoot, because I thought it was really, really clever.
That was clever.
But it's actually, it perfectly aligns with this episode, because you're still at the window where you can leave these spring plants in without harm coming to them. Right. And that's one of the glories of like spring gardening, you know, right around this time of the recording, probably more so than when this airs. But then fall gardening as well. Like, remember, I harvested the last of my greens, you know, collards and kale in January of 2024. Right. You know, can you imagine leaving any summer crop on the vine, you know, for months?
Yeah.
You know, summer doesn't give you that benefit as much as your cooler season gardening. And so it makes me look at kind of what I'm growing, and I'm mentally making an adjustment for my harvesting strategy. Like, what are the things that are going to go bad, right, if I don't pull them? Those should be the first out. So not necessarily just first in, first out. For spring, it's the which is, you know, going to hold longer versus which is a little bit more sensitive to when it's harvested. You know, so cauliflower and broccoli are great examples of, you know, those should be coming out of your garden. Like, it needs to be timely, you know, where some of these other things give you a bit more time. Peas are a good example of it's a clock on those before they aren't as desirable.
And I'm not talking
about the entire peas plant, you know, but the actual peas that you're pulling off of the plant.
Yeah, because I've never left them long enough, but I imagine they would. No, I bet they would die off, because mine usually start getting diseases and everything else. And that's usually my tall tale sign of like, hey, pull it. But, you know, I've got that cabbage bed in it. At this point now, I think it's got 5 cabbages left in it. And again, some of them are size to harvest, some of them aren't, but you know, at any point it's like I can harvest that. So at this point of my 9 beds that I have in the, and then in the main garden, I've got 5. No, damn, I added 2. How many do I have now? 7. Okay, 11 beds that I have. Okay, never do math in public, everybody. Start to feel like an idiot. Out of the 7 beds in the main part of my garden, 2 of them will be emptied within by the middle of April to fully plant. But the cabbage bed, who has a couple cabbages dispersed, you know, out, not really densely packed, I can plant around that. And this has always been my trick. And I can start my tomatoes as long as I can space them out like I want. And they can start to grow while the cabbages finish out. So it is putting a lot of pressure on my soil, but that is one way that you can look at that. So that is part of my plan to do that. Now, I've got a whole nother bed of cabbage. Like, I don't know if it's going to make it. I hope to God that it gets that big enough in time, but it may not. And I may just be surviving off of what I planted in the fall.
Yeah.
So it's kind of this, you know, this vicious cycle.
I think it obviously depends on what you're planting as well. So cabbage, they're pretty unique, as are, you know, kind of your broccolis, any of those heading crops, you know, your cauliflower, they're unique in that whatever space they have, you know, when they're not quite mature but on their way, is a space they're going to take. Whereas this year, my intention was, I have kind of like a bed and a half. It's all in all 11, both beds sitting side by side are 11 feet by about 4 feet. Right. It's in the backyard garden. And so the design, you know, what I have in the planter wrap is spring, it's spinach. And then there's going to be where I'm planting tomatoes in that space, but I can easily pluck out any spinach plants that are still growing and plop in a tomato plant, right? You know, and so as that spinach finishes up, because it's going to either, I'm going to harvest it all or it's going to bolt, you know, well in advance of my tomatoes getting any real size on them. You know, yeah. So that's not the only thing I've been able to do with that successfully is like lettuce. I have, you know, pretty much done what you've done with a whole bed is emptied and then I'm planting the next thing for the next season.
Right.
But, you know, I do want to be able to kind of plug and play a little bit more.
Yeah. And see, like, so the bed that the cabbage is in, though, as of right now, well, not as of, but it's going to have sweet potatoes in it, but it's not going to be warm enough for sweet potatoes for at least 3 more weeks. Mm-hmm. So I've got 3 solid weeks at the time of this recording to go through and let those things continue to do as much growing as they're going to do before I can even think about putting in those sweet potatoes. And that's part of that bridging the gap. So I don't plan to plant my sweet potatoes probably until the last week of April, most likely the first week of May. That's my plan to do that. It doesn't mean it's going to go out that way, but that's what I, you know, that's generally what I plan to do. So as you'll see that the garden, my garden will start changing. You know, we've got a whole bed of broccoli, which is heading up very nicely right now. That will all be emptied out. Like as soon as that goes, I mean, we're going to be eating a lot of broccoli all at once. You know, we're hoping to be eating 2 meals a week out of the broccoli and then just kind of clear it out throughout, you know, over the space of a certain amount of time so that we can get our peppers into that bed in time. And so we'll plan to do that. It doesn't mean it's going to work out perfectly, but, and it doesn't ever work out perfectly, but what I strive to do is to be able to get the crop in, to get it to grow, to get it harvested, to get the next one in the appropriate amount of time. So I'm not coming in when it's, and in my area, it's just too hot to plant. You know, you put a plant in and the soil's just drying out instantly. Like that's not what I want. I want to be, take advantage of some of the cooler spring weather that's going to keep that soil moist longer to let those plants thrive.
Yeah. How's the rain been in your area?
Right now, 2 inches today so far. So we've been getting a decent amount of rain. We just had like 2 weeks of no rain, but everything's going really good as far as that goes. And which probably means we're going to have a dry summer. You know, we had that one spring like 2 years ago. We didn't get any rain all spring. It was really bad. And we struggled the whole year with that. I mean, it was just, you're just playing catch up the whole time.
Yeah. One of the benefits that you have when you're using a full space and emptying it and then planting the next thing is in that full space, the cabbage bed, everything is about the same size. Generally, things are going to have the same needs as it relates to, you know, how much or little they're being watered. One of the challenges you have when you try to bridge the gap between spring and summer is you have things that, you know, in a case of a mixed bed, that have different needs or different sizes. You may be direct sowing something, you know, compared to what's already planted there. If you're transplanting things in, they're going to be smaller than what's already there, you know. And so I do a lot of, I mean, obviously I do all of my gardening, you know, watering by hand, with the exception of, you know, if I'm away or if it's super duper hot. So I'm able to kind of manage that. And plus in the spring going into summer, it's still damp from all of the snow that we would have gotten the previous year. Now, this year, we didn't get a whole lot of snow. So there is that. And so far this spring, it's been a bit dry. So we'll see what these next weeks have in store. I haven't pulled out my hose yet, which I plan on doing this weekend.
Well, and that whole thing about not having a lot of snow is actually a really big deal, because that will set you up for a drought for the spring. I mean, a lot of people don't understand that, but that snowpack is a huge deal in northern states. You know, that was a big reason why there was so many droughts in the West Coast, is because they just didn't get the snowpack to bring the water down in the spring months. So, I mean, yeah, it's one of those things, too, where it's like you've got to take advantage of the water that's available to you. And look, man, I've got this theory, and I swear I'm right, but I think that we underwater our gardens because every time it rains, my garden explodes in growth. Every single time. Like, I go out of town, and I'll set this – like I've set the sprinkler, and this is before I used drip line, and I set it, and then we got like a terrible rainstorm, and then I came back, and like 5 days later, my garden had like doubled in size in that 5 day period. It was crazy. I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's the acidity in the rain. I don't know what it is, but whatever it is, it definitely makes a garden grow. I'm convinced by it. And so in the spring, when it's your wet months, typically speaking, this is a really good time to get it because it eases the pressure on you too to water. Mm-hmm. No matter if you're watering by hand or you have timers, it still eases the pressure. You can get seeds sowed a lot quicker and easier, stuff like that.
Yeah, I typically want my soil damp as I'm sowing seeds. So I'm okay with it's rained yesterday and then I'm going to go out to sow seeds. I still am going to come back in and water it. I think it all depends because, you know, I think we underestimate how much rain actually comes down and how saturated the garden is from rains, right? You know, it's like, oh, it's a nuisance. It's been raining all morning, you know, but shoot, that rain's barely gotten through my mulch. You know, I don't have one because I always leave it out every year and it ends up cracking, but I'm going to see if I can put it on my buy list. The kind of rain gauge, again, it just counts the inches of water. It's always a good help because it's a reminder of, oh, it seemed like it rained all yesterday and maybe it did off and on, but you got barely an inch of rain, you know, so keep that in mind, right?
I got two questions or two things from Leonard here. One of them, if you guys want to know the chemical composition of rainwater, is sodium, potassium, magnesium, calcium, chloride, bicarbonate, and sulfate ions. There you go. And they also have ammonia, nitrate, nitrite, nitrogen, and other nitrous, whatever. I can't read all those words. So thank you, Leonard. And then another one is, well, here you go, Batavia. Do you have crops that you pull and some that you just let go?
It depends on how much I care about the crop. So I always let my lettuce go. Like almost always.
I don't understand the question.
So like there are crops that I want to plant and get out of the garden. That's what I think Leonard means.
Like broccoli.
Yeah. Like broccoli. Yeah. Versus crops that I kind of like mustards or crops that I'll harvest a bit off of. And then instead of just saying, hey, it's time to pull that plant, I'll let it go and do whatever it's going to do. Right. You know, so that it's that gap between the plant is at the end of its production and then it is absolutely done producing. So you and I talked about this quite often a few years ago where it's like, we talked about it for tomatoes, like how much further do you let your tomatoes go? But that's a different season.
Yeah, I, so, you know, we talk about broccoli a lot because it is difficult to grow this time of year. Mm-hmm. It will bolt on you quick. And then the whole thing with that is once it's bolted, you either save the seed or you're wasting your time. As far as lettuce and greens go, well, actually, lettuce is a really good example of this. I harvest it differently in the spring than I do the fall. So in the fall, I do cut and come again because it's not going to bolt on me. The only thing it's going to do is die. In the summer, I take the whole plant because it's going to bolt on me. So like right now, if you go out in my garden, what you see is you're going to see lettuce that's growing, and I actually didn't thin it at all. So I do it in two steps. One, I go, and then as it gets bigger, I'll thin it. You know, they're actually fairly large to where there's one head. So I'll go down the line and I'll thin them all. Mm-hmm. And then I come back and then I'll take the whole head. So you'll see it like it'll look really packed and then it'll look emptied and then it'll look nice and dense with single heads and then they'll all be gone within reason. So that's what I did because they're just going to go to seed. And especially in that bed in particular, I need that bed to come be prepared for my corn. So that's where I sit with that. So I will harvest everything because I need to get everything out again by roughly May to go ahead and do, which means I got to eat a lot of lettuce this year. So that's kind of how I manage that. So in this time of year, there is nothing that I just let stay in the garden anymore. I did last year let kale stay in the garden, and it did fine, but it got so much pest pressure.
Yeah.
And I wasn't treating for that kind of pest anywhere else that I stopped treating it. So it went away. But no, there's nothing that I just leave in the garden this time of year. I'm pretty proactive about pulling it out.
Yeah. And it's actually a good point around, you know, potential harm with leaving crops in your garden longer than they mm-hmm. are providing value. Right. You know, so lettuce, generally, I don't have pest issues, and it can go to seed, and I can ultimately either let it self, you know, the seed self sow. Like I dug up some lettuce, itty bitty lettuce starts from my mulch this year and put them in a 6-pack. They've been outside for a couple of weeks. Like, all right, fine. You know, go ahead and get started. You know, so there's that. The mustards, again, it's super easy for me to save those seeds for mustards. But there are things like for kale, I can let kale stay in the garden the entire season. And we talked about this a bit last year. So when I say the entire season, I mean the entire growing year. Sometimes my kale gets just hit with pests, mostly aphids, which again, I know Ben, it's one of his favorite non-pest issues, mostly aphids. And depending on the variety I'm growing, it's just not as desirable. So like the Tuscan/Dino/Lacinato kale, you know, those leaves do much better when it comes mm-hmm. to like aphids for me. The curly kale, which I know you love, which I enjoy quite a bit. If I get to like July with that, those plants that have been in the garden since the spring, they're probably going to be a bit icky, you know? So again, I've toyed around with just pulling them and planting them again as new plants, you know, pulling them at some point in June and planting them again at some point late July, early August, probably more like August going into September at the latest for me. So anyway.
Yeah, and I mean, my neighbor's got a kale plant that's 3 years old. Mm-hmm. So there's that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think it depends on a combination of your growing area. Absolutely. By that, I mean, that encompasses like weather, how much water you normally get, you know, rainwater. I think it depends on the pests that are rampant in your garden, whether you leave it or, you know, you try to get some more miles out of it or you pull it. And then I think I look at it and say, how much of the thing do you want to eat as well? I can basically never get enough kale. Lettuce is wild because I normally have really good luck with getting lettuce started and, you know, plant it. And at some point it just looks really, really pretty. But I haven't tuned in at all with the how much I really need. Right. Mm-hmm. You know, I basically eat about a shoebox worth of lettuce. Remember the shoebox, like maybe within a week and a half during the off season. So now it's a matter of how many plants really will accumulate a shoebox and a half or a shoebox of lettuce every week and a half from my garden. I need to figure out that calculation.
Well, you know, like right now we're eating lettuce every day. Mm-hmm. You know, it's somehow, some way, it may only be one leaf on a sandwich or something. Well, I say that, but I put two or three or four on there because I got so much mm-hmm. of it. But yeah, it does come down to how much you want to eat of something. And I think the thing to really talk about here is the pest pressure. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're not going to save the seed and it's bolted.
Yeah.
And I know people are like, oh, I want to help the pollinators. Dude, there's plenty of stuff out there for the pollinators to eat. I've learned a lot about that in the past year. And your kale plants that have flowers on them are not helping the pollinators to the extent that you think they are. Mm-hmm. So it's like, just go ahead and pull them, because what ends up happening is the pests get in there and they start laying their eggs, and then they basically build a colony within, you know, your garden, and they will stay there. So if you're not going to save the seed and you're not going to eat it, just go ahead and get rid of it and move on to the next project, you know. It does two things as well when you do that. It leaves it as in more open space, so you can, let's say that you don't have the planter app and you haven't planned. Well, now you can sit back while you wait for other things to go, and you can plan out what you're going to do. And that's something that's really helped me. Like right now, I have that, you know, my Brussels sprout bed, and I've pulled all of the plants I think I may have one left that's just not going to produce, but I've been going through and pulling all the ones that aren't producing out, and it's made a big difference because I look at it and I'm like, okay, this is what I have left. This is when I need to take it, and this is what needs to go in, and this is how much room there is. And now I can make that work for me. And that's a really big deal, and it makes a huge difference in the for your planning of your garden in the future.
Yeah, so there are like three reasons that I hear people use to support leaving plants in place. That is the pollinators, the flowers is one. Two, the shade that it provides to your garden. And three, which is very much related to two, is you don't have to worry about kind of bare soil, right? And I think if a plant isn't producing and you're not saving the seeds, just like you said, get it out of your garden, especially yeah. those that are known to create, pest colonies in that space, right? You know, pull it, add some mulch on top and keep on moving. Now, if you have significant weeds, you know, that are running over your garden, then that's probably just a different conversation that you need to be having about kind of what your logic is for what things, when things stay. I think that you are really taking a chance in your space if you're just leaving things in place, just for leaving them in place sake, right? You know?
Yeah. So I had a cabbage this year. I wish I was just talking about this on a video. I wish I would have shown it, and I didn't. I don't know why I didn't. Anyways, all the cabbage was doing good, and there was one that was struggling, and it got covered in aphids. And it was the middle of winter, so I couldn't really treat for it. Mm-hmm. And I'd left it there, but I ended up pulling it, even though I could have treated for the aphids eventually, got it under control and gotten a harvest, but because it was so weakened from it and it was so infested that I made the decision just to go ahead and like, hey, get this out of here, isolate it completely. Because you got to think about it. When I removed that plant, I don't know how many aphids, let's say there's 10,000 aphids on there. And I'm not joking when I say that. That's 10,000 aphids with, if 50% of them are female, 5,000 sets of eggs that I just totally removed out of that garden completely. And so it kind of set me up for success in the future. And it's little steps like that that make all the difference in the world. And the top gardeners will tell you, if you're not saving the seed, pull it out. If you're worried about the pollinators, plant a flower. Mm-hmm, yeah. You know, do your research. Do something different.
It depends on even the pest, because it's just not about what's on the plant itself. What's on those leaves? It's absolutely about what eggs they've laid. What are you just, again, harboring in your soil now? Right.
Right.
You know? Yeah, I mean, I definitely think that, you know, clearing that space for that purpose, going from spring to summer, absolutely makes sense. And just one last note on that. You still also have roots in the ground that are, yeah. you know, sucking up nutrients, that's sucking up water, right, you know, for no purpose. So.
Yeah, I kind of like to leave my roots in the ground.
Mm-hmm. See, that,
if they're not going to get in the way.
I mean,
I like it
leave
because
them in the ground
creates channels.
To the point of, like, composting in ground. It's different yeah. than leaving them in the ground just because. Now, what I sometimes will do for convenience sake is I will cut a plant basically at, like, let's say it's, you know, July or something, and I want something that's not doing well, you know, or I'm done growing that thing. I may cut it and leave the root intact just because I don't want to disturb what's around it, you know. So that's an occasion that, you know, I'll take and do that. It all depends on what I'm growing. Like, let's say I have carrots around the thing, you know, and so I don't want to disturb the roots of those carrots to pull whatever that other plant is. I'll wait until that space has more clearance before I actually pull it. The roots in my garden, there's never enough time for the majority of them to actually completely break down. That's one of the reasons why I pull all of them at the end of the season in a good year. The cage baby actually still had, since I harvested those plants in January, just before that real cold spell, a part of my spring activities. It's like the last sets of beds that I need to clear for the 2024 garden season.
Right. Yeah. So for my Brussels sprout bed, for instance, I will go through and I will pull every single root out of there that's left at this point. You know, some of the stuff that was in the fall, it'll still stay there. Well, you know, the earlier stuff that was harvested, but for the most part, you're right. I will go through and pull all that out. And generally, I don't leave roots in the ground unless the bed's either going to be empty or there is a great amount of time from me pulling, like in the end of fall or something like that. But in spring, it's basically get a clean start and then move on and go from there. Yeah. And then that really sets me up for more success because there's not as much competing. And I do, you know, when you intensively garden in a small space, you know, unless you're given your tomatoes, you know, 4 square feet of space, which most people aren't, every square inch of soil available for the roots is going to make a difference for you. End of story.
Yeah. just one quick note. If I am planting in a bed that already had spring crops in and I'm planting something for summer, one of the things that I do is, you know, either, so it's, you know, either or, a handful of fresh soil, but more likely a handful of compost in the hole before I put that spring plant in. If right. I'm doing a transplant, and then depending on what was growing there before, I may also do a sprinkle of, like, you know, 10-10-10 types, just an even granular fertilizer. That's New Batavia, not New Year New Batavia, but just New Batavia. And that's been working out well for me.
It's called evolution. And so just so you guys know, if you're like, oh God, here we go, we're talking about fertilizer again, and you don't understand fertilizer, I just did a video on Sandy Bottom Homestead where I legit broke down the nutrients and what they do to get people started. So I don't know. We haven't really discussed this far in advance on the podcast how deep we're going to go into fertilizer this year, but I'm going to go pretty deep in it because I feel like there is a misunderstanding, as you clearly could probably tell from the last episode we did, or a few episodes ago. I can't remember now. But that's something that is there. So, but you're right. A basic fertilization is like the final point into all of this, is get some kind of pre-planting fertilizer in the ground. Even if you don't want to do a regular schedule of it, just do it once. And because you have to remember, you're pulling, you've just taken crops out that are feeding off of that soil, and you're not giving it enough time to go back. And so you got one or two options. You can either plant 50% of your garden in the spring and then plant the other 50% of your garden in the summer, or you can replenish that soil. And there's multiple ways to do it. Fertilizer, compost, mulches all do it. All that stuff will help. Different kinds of amendments and everything. But when it all breaks down, other than the mulch, it's basically a form of fertilizer. So strongly recommended. You will be very happy with that. Just use a well-balanced, meaning all numbers are the same or very close to the same. So 10, 10, 10, 20, 20, 20, 3, 3, 3, 5, 4, 4, 5, 3, 3, 5, 3, 2, something like that, where it's just not crazy different numbers. You don't want anything like 14, 1, 0 or 1, 14, 8 or something like that. You want it, you know, just keep it simple. Let's kiss on it. Keep it simple, stupid. So, you know, those are all really important. And, you know, bridging the gap into summer is, it doesn't seem like it's that hard. And it's not hard, but these things will help you successfully get going into your summer season, I think. And I know we didn't give like a bulleted list, but you can pull it out of the conversation.
Mm-hmm. We hope, yeah. This is the beginning, though, I think, for a lot of us with the, you know, beginning of the troubleshooting, right? You know, so if you're not doing it already, which, you know, I try to, but I'm much more consistent once we get to the kind of the summer growing season. This is when the daily walks, you know, return. There is, you know, a significant weather shift for me. And, you know, it's the beginning of pests for me. Spring is pretty low key. From a pest perspective. But, you know, I think about the things I'm direct sowing and the things I'm transplanting. And I'm also listening to a car that doesn't have a muffler, it seems. there's one of those every episode, right? But I'm also looking at a tighter window for growing, right? You know, so it's time to get aggressive, essentially. I have some crops that, based on my growing season, I got to get in on time. Because guess what? If I don't get them in on time, and this is going to be coming up in the future weeks for me, then I may be looking at something growing all season without it actually producing. You know, right. So if you, which is the reason why Ben mentioned the planter app at the beginning of the season or beginning of the episode, you know, it still works now, right? You know,
all year. All year. Yep. And then, you know, the other thing too, when you're bridging the gap, is you're going to see places in your garden where you're going to have, you know, you think you may have holes that you can plant. And that's something to evaluate too. And I mean, look, it's a low blow, everybody, but I'm telling you, you can go check out our seed store below. It's all direct sowable. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to, the reason why I'm bringing it up is because we have bush beans in there, and specifically for this reason.
Yeah.
Get yourself a pack of bush beans and keep them on hand, because you're going to have a gap and you can pop one of those bad boys in, and within no time you're going to be harvesting beans at least. And you, they take up an exact square foot. Mm-hmm, you got more space? Get yourself some watermelons and some cantaloupes. I'm saying, we got it. We got you, baby. But they're all, you know, direct sowable, especially like the okra too. High producer, high producer. So we recently hit 1 million downloads. I didn't say this at the top of the hour, because if you're still with us, you are our favorite listener. And so you can use the code 1 million. No, spell it any way you want. I don't care. No spaces. Use all letters, numbers. Doesn't matter. It gets you 10% off and a free pack of seeds. And it's good all the way up until the first day of summer.
All right. My very last note on the bridging the gap is, it's time to make note of and document what went well and what didn't in your spring garden, right? You know, so this episode comes out like mid-April. It doesn't mean that you're right in this moment doing that, because it depends on, again, your timing and your schedule in your garden. But don't let the season change from spring to summer without you doing that. Because remember, our garden memories are sometimes foggy, speaking for myself, and I'm speaking for all of you and you and you. So really good time to make notes on things that you started too late, right? You didn't get a seed chart from my buddy Ben, you know, check all of the links, you know, so you didn't get a seed chart, or you did and you missed some of those dates. So what things did you not start by seed early enough? What things did you not direct sow early enough? What things did you put out too early? What things did you put out too late? You know, what things were you excited about growing or otherwise, and it just did okay? You know, are you adjusting varieties? Like, this is a good time to make those notes about your spring garden. Because guess what? There's spring next year if we're all fortunate enough to be here.
Well, it's like I said in a previous video, it's my two R's. You recognize the problem, and now you're going to rectify it. And we've got to rectify it. And that means you may not be able to fix it now, but putting that plan into place is rectifying the problem. So Batavia is exactly right. Kudos to you, because that's so important to take a step back, look at it, make the changes, make the notes, take the notes, however you want it. And then the next season is just going to be better. And, you know, a lot of people, I've gotten questions, and I'm sure you have, is like, how do you get your garden to look that way? Blah, blah, blah. And it's like, dude, every year I'm learning more and more, and I'm putting these plans into place. It's not like I was born and I was like, here's my thumb, it's green, you know. And I'm not even saying I'm the best gardener. And you can go anytime you want into my garden and find a problem, for sure. But how you handle it is what makes it better.
Yep.
So, and on that note, it is time for us to get to the question of the day. This one comes from, oh, you dirty, dirty person, you. It disappeared on me. This one comes from the Backyard Gardens Community Garden. And I had it pulled up, and for some reason, it went boo-boo on me.
Do you remember the question? I'll find the person's name.
I want to shout the person out.
Well, yeah, we're going
to. Oh, you're going to look for the person's name?
Yeah, we could do that, you know, as we wrap up the question. You remember the question.
So it went, the question, when Batavia finds it, we will, we'll read the question verbatim. But basically, this individual, your shout out's coming soon. Don't worry. Sit tight. Is they have a clay soil. They have clay soil and they're putting in raised beds and they want to know how we maintain our raised beds. So there's, you know, clay soil is a difficult thing. I grew up in an area with clay soil and we actually had a fantastic garden when I grew up. And I've often told this story a few times on this show, but my parents called it like they had like alien soil. So they couldn't understand why it grew so well. Well, what ended up happening was every year, I remember as a kid going and every single year getting mulch and putting into the flower beds for no real reason. We just, that was just something they did. You know, we went and it was leaves and I think it was horse manure that we would get and we would put it in. And over time, it amended that soil and made it to where it was this monster soil that my parents called it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's the same with a raised bed. The benefit of throwing a raised bed on top of it is you instantly get soil to grow in. But underneath it, you basically have this clay still. So if the roots go down deep enough, they're still going to hit clay. So as far as maintaining it goes, I know Batavia and I, do we do the same thing or do we do it different?
As it relates to each year, what we do with our gardens?
Yeah.
See, it's different only because your garden season, it wraps around the entire year. So it feels like for me, you're always coming in, making adjustments to your beds. My way is pretty much, you know, either I'm amending my bed at the end of the garden season so I can get the jump start in the spring. Or like with the cage, baby, that bed is set. You know, basically it's the same way it was last year. So when I clear that bed, I'll rake back all of my leaves, whatever's left that hasn't broken down. I'll pull all the plants that are in there. And then I will add, that's like a 30-foot by 4-foot space. I'll probably add about 5 bags of manure, 5 to 6 even. And this is a call out to what we talked about a couple of episodes ago where I'm probably over adding compost is what I meant, not manure. Compost has manure in it. I'm over adding it because it basically is like 125-pound bag, takes you over 100 square feet, you know, and I'm adding, yeah, you know, like more than quadruple that. So that's my way, you know, plant in that space. And in that case, I'd just be planting in using some fertilizer because, again, I've added the compost kind of across it. And then adding some fresh mulch, you know. So that's been my way. And to your point, even if you look at like, you know, you have some soil there, that transplanter where you're direct sowing, you're only talking about a few inches of soil that it's going to touch. But you obviously do have to be considerate for when that thing continues to grow. I'd probably just be, you know, extra careful around things that are root crops that need to drill down, you know, your parsnips, your carrots and things that may be a little bit more difficult when it comes to that clay soil. I know that you've been playing around with that with the Wild Things garden.
Yeah. So the Wild Garden, I've got compacted. So we're not going to really worry about that. I found the question too. Let me finish my part and I'll read the question. Sorry, my mind's going a million different ways. For me, it's, you know, once you fill it up, look, first of all, don't buy bag soil to fill it up. You might as well mortgage your house. Go buy bulk soil. If you don't have a truck, get somebody that's got a truck. If they don't have a truck, just pay the $20 for them to dump it in your driveway and go fill it up. It'll save you a ton of money. You're going to get more quality soil, higher quality soil that way, generally speaking. And as far as maintaining them, man, the only thing that I do is I top it off and I alternate every year. So 1 year I'll top off with topsoil. And then the next year I'll top off with either a 50-50 mix, which is 50% topsoil, 50% compost, or just compost. Usually it's a 50-50 though. Found that adding topsoil is more beneficial than actually adding in huge amounts of compost. So you can do that. A lot of places that specialize in soil and stuff will have a 50-50 mix. If that doesn't, if that is not the case, you can just get a little bit of compost and add in. But the trick is you just got to keep them topped off. The other thing to do is I fertilize a lot, clearly. Pre-planting fertilizers, adding in mulches and stuff all helps build the soil. It's just like with your clay soil. You're just going to continuously build and build and build and build. And the thing is after, so here's the point where I'm going to read the question because it'll kind of put it into context. So Jordan.
Hey, Jordan.
There it is. After a few years of fighting with our clay-like soil, we're thinking about trying raised beds this year. What have you learned from experience when it comes to starting and maintaining and caring for raised beds? So there you go. So they've been fighting the clay soil, and this is why I wanted to read it. Because if you've already been planting in clay soil, and if you've been mulching, and you've been continuously to plant, just keep doing it. Keep doing it over and over, and it will get better, and you will have a plot of it, because all of those nutrients and stuff will sink down, and you can lightly turn it over. The thing is you don't want to completely till it, because you can compact the soil. So it's just constantly, working the soil. And when I say working, planting in it and stuff like that. But the raised beds will fix your clay issue. I know it sucks to deal with clay. Like I said, it's just over time, it gets better and better and better. And with the raised beds, it's just constantly adding more and more soil in. That's the only thing is like the maintenance of it just kind of sucks a little bit for me.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, but... If I'm tracking correctly, because the first part of that question was really important. Am I tracking correctly with they basically were growing in ground originally?
I'm imagining so. Yeah. It doesn't say, but I'm imagining so.
Yeah. And so if they're considering putting in raised beds, and in that case, yeah, you are adding soil. I've done garden beds both ways. In my early garden, the cage baby had basically native soil, and over the years, I added soil to it using bag soil. When I started building my raised beds from scratch on the backyard patio, which is concrete, of course, so in that case, everything that goes into those beds, is new. There's nothing there, right? And so that's only about 10 inches up. I use all bag soil for that. I have one garden bed that produces the best food every season, right? And I've also bought bag soil that was just crap, right? Keep that in mind. The front yard garden, when it first premiered in 2019... Sorry, I just tickled myself. I got a soil dump. It was a pain in the butt, but absolutely worth it from a financial perspective. So do those calculations closely. I got too much soil, but that's what I do with all of my life. Too much of the thing. I got too much soil. And I was like trying to hock soil because I don't have a driveway. And based on my city lot, there's really no place for them to put it other than an empty parking space on the corner, right? You know, so my neighbor is super cool, but I just didn't want to leave like literally a pile of dirt there after I'd filled all of my beds. I built an extra bed in the backyard because I had so much soil. And so that was actually really good soil at the top of that dump. Right. I guess it would have been at the bottom once they loaded. Once I got to the very bottom of it, it was questionable. So just make sure you're getting to a place that's going to provide you some quality garden soil, garden blend. My last raised bed that I built, which is one of those high raised beds. So mine generally sit anywhere between 10 inches tall for the wood beds or like 1.5 inches tall. 1.5 feet tall for the front yard garden. Those are a little bit taller. And then I have a brand new bed that's like 32 inches tall. That's the take on the hula culture method. And that's bagged soil. And I know I'm keeping a close eye on that. Right?
Let me ask you a question. How much is a bag of soil for you?
2 cubic feet.
That was the second part.
Yeah, a bag of garden soil is what I purchased. 2 cubic feet is like
$9. $9 for a 2 cubic foot bag of soil?
Yep.
So I did, I built 2 garden beds this year, and they were 30 cubic feet volume. That was the volume of each one. Mm-hmm. So that's 60 cubic feet. Mm-hmm. So I just filled those 2 beds for $40. And then for another $40, I topped off all beds in my garden total. So I spent $80 in soil. So it costs you $270 to fill up those two beds if you buy bag soil. I'm just saying, like, don't buy bag soil if you don't have to. Get the soil dump. I'm telling you, it's the only way to go.
So what?
When you break down math like that, it's sickening.
What two beds are you talking about?
My two front beds that I built this year.
Yeah,
they were totally 100% empty.
Yeah. So, and that's what I would have done when it comes to those lower beds, right? I got to double check that math. But for the last bed that I built, 32 inches tall, but I have probably about 10 inches of soil. Everything else underneath is branches, leaves, spent potting soil, because I do a lot of container gardening. And then I have about 10 inches of good soil. And that bed, it's 2x8. It's a kind of a unique design. So a smaller, narrow bed. And I think I used like 3, maybe 4 bags of soil. So that's 9, 18, 24. You know, it's almost $40.
$36 for 4 bags.
Yeah. Yeah, again, yeah. It's dollar for dollar, dump the soil, you know, yeah. But it's just not as convenient to some, you know. So I hope it works out for Jordan and them.
Keep us up to date, Jordan. There you go. But just maintain it the best you can. Add soil, fertilize, grow. That's the whole thing. And be sure, look, you're building a raised bed. Go ahead and get the planter app. I mean, come on. Links below. Booyah. You need some seeds? Get them from us. There you go. Everybody, thank you so much for being here. We truly hope that we've added value to your garden today and that you can grow more, because we are here for one thing and one thing only, and that's to learn to grow and grow for change.
And now I'm going to see you.
Now you know why people feel like celebrating at harvest time.
All over the world, people have feasting and good times when the crops have been gathered in.
Thanks for checking out the show. If you like what we're doing and you'd like to support us, you can become a patron at patreon.com/backyardgardens, or you can be an Apple subscriber. And in both of those, you'll get an extra episode every month. You can also make a one-time PayPal donation with the link below. And you can get all kinds of gardening gear like t-shirts and mugs and cups from the link below at Teespring. And we have an Amazon store which has all the products that we use and recommend in our gardens, and it helps support our show. And we also add to this list periodically, so be sure to check it out periodically to see if there's anything that you need for your garden. Everything that you do, including a like and a subscribe and even a review, will help us learn to grow and grow for change.
See ya.